You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, this is Tim McMaster taking you around the American League East for our MLB.com Extras podcast. This week, we're playing a little game. We'll play who's the most likely player on each club in the East to achieve certain accomplishments during the 2016 season. We start things off with Ian Brown, our MLB.com Red Sox reporter. So this week on the podcast, we're going to do some most likelies. What Blue Jay player is most likely to, and then we'll give you a question. You got to fill it in. But before we get to that, wanted to touch on one other story this week, and that is looking back on one of really the better pitchers probably in Blue Jays history when you think about it. Pat Henkin had a great career with the Blue Jays, and he goes into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. I guess it won't actually go in until the summer, but it has been announced. Can you just talk a little bit about what he meant to this franchise back when he was pitching?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. He's definitely one of the best pitchers of all time to wear a Blue Jays uniform. And, you know, a lot of people look at Roy Halladay as probably being the best, but Pat Henkin would be right up there. And he's a guy who broke in during the glory years of the Blue Jays in those early 1990s. And as a rookie, really hit the ground running. And then later on, when that team was broken up, he was kind of the guy who led the transition to the next era of Blue Jays baseball. And, of course, he came along with a Cy Young Award in there, really just overall consistent guy. And he was someone who you could really peg pretty much every year for over 200 innings. And eventually that workload did catch up with him, probably led to his career being not quite as long as maybe he would have liked. But certainly during those 1990s, just one of the best pitchers in baseball year in and year out.
I feel like somehow he went under the radar because obviously familiar with the name Pat Henkin, remember him pitching in the World Series in the 90s and the success he had. But to go back and look at the actual numbers and the number of innings he pitched and the Cy Young Award, a 20-win season, I think some of that has been lost over time a little bit, at least outside of Toronto.
No, it really has. And I think part of the reason there is that by the time some of those seasons were happening in the mid to late 90s. The Blue Jays were no longer really relevant in terms of the rest of the league. They weren't really competitive during that time. But he was also underappreciated during the playoff runs as well. During one of the World Series years, he had just a great year in the starting rotation. Really put together a really nice career. But you're certainly right. I think he really is a guy who, when you look back on, was underappreciated for really the decade of success that he had.
Really cool honor, though, going into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. All right, let's move on to these most likely twos. And there's a whole bunch of these, Gregor. We'll get through as many as we can. But I want to start with this one. We're going to start with the pitching staff. And who's the most likely Blue Jay to throw a no-hitter or perfect game in 2016?
I think I'd have to go with Marco Estrada. He's a guy who almost did it a couple of times, in 2015. There was that memorable start down in Tropicana Field where Josh Donaldson went diving into the stands. I think that was in the eighth inning to record an out, and he was only a few outs away from becoming the second Blue Jays player to throw a no-hitter, with Dave Steeb being the only other guy. And, he's going to be tough to bounce back again next year with the type of year he had last season. But he's the guy who, when he's on, has that type of no-hit ability.
That's a great answer. I think a lot of people thought you would have gone Marcus Stroman, but good point about how close he got a year ago for sure. All right, up next is who's the Blue Jay most likely to hit for the cycle?
Well, for that one, I think you got to look at someone who's probably going to be able to be the threat to get the triple, which would be the hardest one there. And so that's why I'm not going to go with maybe a popular pick in Josh Donaldson. To me, it would either be a guy like Kevin Pillar, or I think my real pick here would be Devin Travis. Once he gets healthy, gets back into the lineup, he might not be playing until late May, early June. But he's going to have, if he can recover, he's going to have a few months. He's kind of a guy who's ideally situated for the cycle.
All right, on MLB.com, we have a feature or a segment or videos that we call must-sees, and basically they go to players who make great plays defensively or dramatic home runs. The C can stand for catch, can stand for clutch, can stand for a lot of things, but they're memorable moments that stand out, and there isn't one for every game, so they really have to be a standout play. So the next question is, who's the Blue Jay most likely to collect a must-see for MLB.com?
Yeah, this one's an easy one for the Jays and probably an obvious one, but it's Kevin Pillar. I think he probably was among the lead leaguers in that last year. And, he had the Spider-Man catch in left field. He had the Superman catch in center field. It seemed like at least one big-time catch a week was being made by him. And as long as he can stay healthy, there's no reason to believe that those type of acrobatics in center field won't continue.
Yeah, I think there was a stretch early in 2015. I think he had three must-sees in about 10 days when he really got rolling. That's really when he put himself on the map during 2015, became a mainstay in that Blue Jays defense. All right, up next, who's the Blue Jay most likely to hit a grand slam? Plenty of options for this one.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'll go with Edwin Encarnacion for this one because, I think one thing that helps his cause is Jose Bautista is going to be in front of him in the lineup. And Jose Bautista draws an awful lot of walks, and if there's runners on scoring position, runners on base, Bautista has shown that he's not willing, that he's always kind of willing to pass the baton if they don't get the type of pitch selection he's looking for, and that puts Encarnacion in a real nice spot in that lineup to drive in a lot of runs, come up with potentially the bases loaded, and then that's why it'd be my pick for the grand slam.
Ian, we're going to play Red Sox most likely a little later in the podcast, kind of our own little game that we have going on the podcast this week. But before we get into that, it is Super Bowl week, and the Red Sox actually have a bit of a Super Bowl connection, right? I think you caught up with Jack Thompson, member of the Carolina Panthers, who actually played in the Red Sox system.
Yeah, Jack Thompson was an 18th round pick of the Red Sox back in 2012. And at the time, the Red Sox were really excited about this kid. He hadn't played a lot of baseball, but he was just a freakish athlete. And, his mother had told the Red Sox scouting director she really didn't want him to play football because his older brother had played in the NFL and blew out his Achilles in the second year and his career was over just like that. So she was hoping he would play baseball. So the Red Sox drafted him out of his high school in Sacramento, tried to develop him. He played in the Gulf Coast League and didn't work out very well for him. He only got about 37. He was like 0 for 37 or something with 22 strikeouts and just didn't work out for him. But, I talked to people in the Red Sox farm system at the time. I talked to them recently and they thought that, if he had stuck it out, he might have been able to be a pretty good baseball player just because he was such a gifted athlete. But obviously by the fact that he's starting at linebacker for the Panthers in this week's Super Bowl, he probably made the right choice to go play football. He's just a tremendous athlete and there'll be some interest from people within the Red Sox who kind of helped develop it in 2012 to see what he does against the Broncos in this game.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see because when a guy is good at both sports like that but has struggles in baseball, it is a grind being on those buses in the minor leagues. So when you see the other option, which is to play college football and then go straight to the NFL, I think for some of these guys that seems like the easier path. Interesting, though, that we were almost at a spot where he would have been playing against the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been real interesting. And the Red Sox people might have had some conflicted rooting lines there. But, people here in New England are still a little upset just because the Patriots came, within a two-point conversion of forcing overtime and maybe getting back to the Super Bowl for the seventh time in the Brady era. But, the good news is with the Patriots gone, people are starting to look toward the Red Sox. So it'll be in Fort Myers, within a couple short weeks here.
What a fantastic transition back to baseball, Ian. You don't even need me. You could just do this podcast by yourself. But like you said, just a couple of weeks, they'll be in Fort Myers. So let's talk about the 2016 season. And I mentioned this game, Red Sox most likely to. So basically, I'm going to throw out some possible accomplishments or feats for Red Sox players in 2016. And you need to tell me which player is most likely to get there. We're going to start with the pitching game, and which Red Sox is most likely to throw a no-hitter or perfect game?
This might surprise some people, but I would still say that it's Clay Buchholz, just because when this guy is on, he's electric, and we saw it at times last year, even before he got hurt. He threw a no-hitter in his first in his second major league start, and had an interesting conversation with Clay a couple years ago, I think it was, where he said that. And he kept trying to throw another no-hitter. That might have actually set him back a little bit in his career where he was trying to be too fine at times and too too perfect, and now he's kind of just settled back in and care with who he is. But, yeah, I could still see him throwing another no-hitter or even a perfecto if he has everything going on a given night.
Certainly good to go with the guy who's done it before and who's been there. All right, moving over to the hitter's side, and which Red Sox is most likely to hit for the cycle?
So I would say Mookie Betts, just because he's got a great combination, you know, speed and power, and, you know, surprised everyone when Brock Holt hit for the cycle last year simply because he doesn't hit he doesn't hit many home runs. But, you know, Mookie certainly always a candidate to be able to do that, and he's an electrifying player, and I know that Red Sox fans are looking forward to watch him this year.
And I've always found Fenway to be a fairly cycle-friendly ballpark when you think about the fact that you have the short porch in left and then you have the triangle in center. And really, if you get the ball into that triangle over the center fielder's head, it doesn't really even take a super fast player to get to third if you can put it in the triangle.
Hey, put it this way, Tim. Benji Molina hit for the cycle at Fenway two or three years ago. But no, it was actually the Red Sox haven't had a cycle since I think it was John Valentin in 1996 until Brock Holt last year. So it was kind of one of those weird things. So now maybe they'll get them in bunches and could tee it up for Mookie or Xander this year.
All right. Well, Ian, on MLB.com, we have what we call must-sees, and that's a letter C. The C can stand for classic or clutch or catch. It's a thing that it takes in a great catch, like a game-changing catch or a historic moment, that kind of thing, to earn a must-see for a player. Each team, you know, some teams get a handful of them per season, some teams even less. So with that explained, who is the Red Sox most likely to collect a must-see?
I would say Jackie Bradley, because of, you know, his defense. This guy is just, you know, a spectacular defender. It seems like every time he plays, he makes a play that just leaves you shaking your head. You know, how did he make that catch? How did he make that throw? So I would definitely say Jackie Bradley Jr.
All right, as we get into this podcast, just a couple of weeks to go before the Yankees report to Tampa Bay for the start of spring training. So we're going to kind of play a game here called the Yankees Most Likely. And we're basically going to throw out a bunch of different things that can happen during the 2016 season. And you're going to tell me which Yankee is most likely to achieve that goal, or they're not all necessarily positive, but for the most part, they are goals and accomplishments for the players. Are you ready to play?
All right, I think I'm ready, yeah.
All right, here we go. The first one is, which Yankee is most likely to throw a no-hitter or perfect game in 2016?
Yeah, we haven't seen one in a long time out of a Yankee, but, you know what, I'll go Michael Pineda for that one. I keep thinking back to his 16-strikeout game. I mean, when he's on, and that's what it takes to throw a no-hitter or a perfect game, you got to have everything clicking, and they don't come around very often. I remember talking to David Cohn about that. I think that when Pineda has his stuff, and he is just unhittable and dominant. So if he can catch lightning and have one of those days, I think he would be my pick to be a Yankee to throw a no-hitter or a perfect game on this year's team.
And that'll be one day where they won't have to use that bullpen, which will be good as well. All right, up next, which Yankee is most likely to hit for the cycle?
Well, the trick to hitting for the cycle, the hardest one, is always a triple. So he's got to be a guy with speed, got to be a guy who can hit the ball out of the ballpark. I'll go Brett Gardner for that one. I think Ellsbury could do it too, but Gardy's a little more likely to hit the ball out of the park, so I'm going to say Gardner.
All right, fair enough. They maybe have an extra guy that could do it in Starlin Castro, who they didn't have in the past, but I like your choice of Brett Gardner. All right, we have a thing on MLB.com. We call them must-sees, and that's must with the letter C. The C can stand for a catch or a clutch play or all sorts of different things. But basically great performances, great single performances that can happen. Usually a team only gets a handful of them throughout the season. So now that I've explained what that is to people, which Yankee is most likely to collect a must-see for MLB.com in 2016?
There's a lot of picks for that, but here's where I'll go with Ellsbury. I think that he's all around. He's one of the most athletic players on the team. He does it on defense, offense. There was a game at Fenway Park when he was playing for Boston, and he stole home on Andy Pettit. I think that Ellsbury is a game changer, and he's the most likely to have a highlight reel moment.
Yeah, and saying that, if a Yankee does throw a no-hitter or does hit for a cycle, almost guaranteed to get a must-see classic. So there's that as well. But I agree, Ellsbury's had his fair share of must-sees throughout the years. All right, up next, which Yankee is most likely to hit a grand slam?
got to go with the all-time leader in that category. A-Rod's got 25 of them. Nobody's ever hit more than him, so I think, you know, he's done it before. So all it takes is to get three guys on base. He's not going to wilt in the big moment. He knows what to do. I think that he would be my pick.
All right, up next, I think you're going to come back with a name that maybe you've already said. Which Yankee is most likely to go 2020?
Yeah, that takes me back to my thinking on the cycle question. You know what the funny thing about cycles is, though? I mean, they're so random. They could be anybody. I mean, Brian McCann could hit for the cycle. But to answer your question, 2020, that takes a lot more. You have to obviously have 20 homers and 20 steals. That takes an entire season. I will go with Brett Gardner for that one. Just because Ellsbury, look, he's had a 30-homer season, but last year I think he only had seven. Gardner hit the ball out of the ballpark a little more regularly than Jacoby did, so Brett Gardner is my pick for 2020.
Yeah, Ellsbury went 30-30 with the Red Sox, but that was a little earlier in the career when he was more likely to steal that many bases and get the homers for sure. All right, up next, which Yankee is most likely to have the longest scoreless inning streak?
I'm going to go bullpen on this one. I know that Luis Severino, I remember he had a 16-inning streak this year, but I'm going to go bullpen. I think that dominant bullpen of Dellin Betances, Andrew Miller, Aroldis Chapman, it's going to be one of those guys. Betances, I think, had a 20-inning streak last year. I'll probably go Dellin, even though I think Chapman had a slightly longer one a couple years ago with Cincinnati. I'll say Betances. I think that when he comes in, that huge frame, that big fastball, the curveball, the whole mix, he can be pretty much unhittable at times. I mean, they all can, but I'll go Dellin Betances.
That's been a popular pick as we've gone through different teams with different writers. Everybody seems to be going with the bullpen. Why is that this day and age? Is it easier for a bullpen guy who's only throwing one to two innings a night to string a bunch of those together?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think so. You just don't see too many shutouts, I don't think, anymore. I think that even though scoring is down a little bit, if I have to pick a scoreless inning streak, I'm going to say it's going to come from the bullpen because those guys are coming in fresh. They're throwing hard. You see how Kansas City, for example, went to the World Series based on that formula. The Yankees are trying to replicate it now for two straight years. Bullpen guys, they think that they can come in and just fire you 7, 8, 9 and go home, shake hands. So I think that's the idea, is that if you get a lead to the seventh inning, you should win those games.
Yeah, unless you have a guy like Zach Greinke or Clayton Kershaw, you're not likely to see that long scoreless inning streak out of the starters. All right, same kind of question. Who's the Yankee most likely to have the longest hitting streak?
You know what's funny? Thinking back, Carlos Beltran had a pretty good streak last year. I think it was about 15 games. I think Ellsbury has had 20-plus games in his career, but we didn't really see that kind of player last year. I think he had about a 17-game streak in 2014, his first year with the Yankees. But I'll go with Beltran. I'm going to throw the old guy out there. I think 38 years old, possibly in his final season. But from May 1st on, he was one of their most consistent hitters last year. So I'm going to say Carlos Beltran for that category.
All right, for this next one, feel free to go with a player, but you can also go with Joe Girardi or somebody off the coaching staff. Who's the Yankee most likely to get ejected?
Oh, I mean, it's Girardi is most likely. So let's, I mean, Joe's good to get tossed three or four times a year, I think. And when he does, when he gets hot, it's fun to watch. But I'll say player-wise, I'm going to go Gardner again. I feel like I'm picking Gardner in a lot of categories here, but Brett likes to complain a little bit to the umpires. He looks back, he jaws when he gets a call he doesn't like. And I think that some umpires have a shorter leash than others. You've seen him get in trouble with that before. And I'm going to say Brett Gardner, most likely player to be ejected from a game this year.
Bill, really, soon after we talked last week on the podcast, the Rays went out and made a trade. They send away Jake McGee, something that was no surprise. We had kind of talked about that throughout the offseason, although the longer the offseason went, I thought it was less and less likely to happen. But they go and they get a little extra pop in the outfield, bringing in Corey Dickerson. I think a nice trade for the Rays, but it certainly sets up a number of outfielders. Now they have Dickerson, Kiermaier, Desmond Jennings, Mikey Matuk, who was up last year, Steven Souza Jr., you have Brandon Guyer. I mean, that's six guys I just rattled off. So what are they most likely to do now when it comes to all those different outfielders?
Well, obviously your guess is as good as mine. They never really tip their hand. But I certainly think it's fair speculation that something else is going to happen. after the deal, Matt Silverman said that if they got to the end of spring training and all these guys were healthy, they would have too many, which is pretty obvious. But, I think right now they like having the depth, and they might take it for a little spin and see where it takes them. But, it's dizzying when you start trying to put together what scenarios, might be possible. And, of course, a lot of these guys, some of them are out of options and whatnot, which could play in there as well. But there are a lot of different possibilities, in the outfield, which spills over into first base and at DH as well.
Dickerson was obviously a need when you talk about pop and power and the run-producing ability. So they fill that need, but they lose McGee. Now they have another closer in Boxberger, obviously, who was the closer last year, but McGee, an important arm in the past in that bullpen. So who kind of steps up and fills that role?
Well, they do need someone to step up. But, keep in mind, too, McGee didn't pitch all that much last year.
Right.
So they're pretty much used to, they have pitched in situations or gone into situations without him. Any Romero showed a little something at the end. Alex Colome really stepped up last year in late inning situations. And Xavier Sandano, could be there just as well. So, early in the season, Steve Gelch was doing it. I think he got a little tired towards the end, but I think they have the candidates to do it. And, the one thing to remember about McGee, and I think McGee is going to do well in Colorado, a lot of times the speculation is, the guys who throw curveballs and stuff have trouble getting the spin in that high altitude. And, he's pretty much a fastball guy. So, you're trying to replace him. And who knows if I think Eni Romero, pretty much throws about as hard as he does. But doesn't have the life. Can he keep the command that McGee had? That's one of those questions. And, of course, he's left-handed as well.
One more question on the trade. Dickerson obviously injured most of 2015, had the 24 homers back in 2014 in just 131 games. But a lot of that obviously at Coors Field. Is there any concern about how his numbers will translate into a new home ballpark?
There isn't anything like Coors Field. It's an offensive ballpark. Talking to the hitting coach, he told me, he likes what he sees. He said that and he stressed that the Rays are pretty proficient as far as doing their homework on guys. So they're fairly convinced that he's going to be fine hitting at Tropicana Field. And obviously it might not be what it is at Coors Field. I don't think a lot of people would leave Coors Field and be the same. But they like enough of what they see to have felt like, they needed to pull the deal on this. They kind of felt like he was a special player that was available.
All right, Bill, for the second half of our podcast today, we're going to kind of play a game. Basically, we're going to call it the Rays Most Likely Two, and I'm going to rattle off a bunch of different things that could happen during the 2016 season, most of them accomplishments or events, and it's your job to tell me who the Ray is that's most likely to do that. So let's start on the mound. Who is the Ray most likely to throw a no-hitter or perfect game?
Oh, I don't think I would surprise anyone with going with Archer on that one because so many times in the past you've seen him look like he was going to do that. And, of course, he nearly did it against Houston last year, pitched probably one of the best games in the major leagues. So I'll go with Archer on that.
All right, Bob, to the hitting now. And who's the Ray most likely to hit for the cycle?
Since this is kind of speed-based, I think I'm going to go with Kevin Kiermaier. He had, look at all the triples he had last year. He gets a home run in there, and who knows what his legs can bring him.
Yeah, it seems like the cycle always comes down to that triple, and that's the dividing factor between who can do it and who can't, barring some sort of flukish ball bouncing around in the outfield. But Kiermaier definitely a clear-cut pick on that Rays team. All right, well, on MLB.com, most people know we have what we call must-sees, and that's must with the letter C. The C can stand for lots of different things, clutch, catch, classic, all sorts of stuff. So with that explained, who's the Ray most likely to get a must-see on MLB.com?
Well, again, this is a no-brainer. You got to go back with Kiermaier again because watching him on a daily basis, he does it just about every night, maybe two or three times a game. I've never seen anything like him, so he's my must-see.
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, the official stats, but I'm 99% sure that Kiermaier was the Rays' leader in must-sees a year ago. I think he had a streak of defensive plays there where he was collecting one must-see a week. All right, moving on. Who is the Ray most likely to hit a grand slam?
I think I'll go with Evan Longoria on that one.
All right, and who is the Ray most likely to go 2020? Obviously now you're talking about the speed again, but with some power.
I'm going to go with Steven Souza on that one.
Any particular reason you like Souza? You think he can get to that 20-homer plateau?
I think he'd have a harder time getting to the 20 bases, but, I mean, you know, yeah. He had a lot of homers last year and limited playing time. So, and unfortunately for him, too, that one of his injuries came right when he was finding his groove again. So I think it's very reasonable to think of him hitting, you know, mid-20s to 30 homers.
All right, back to the mound. Who is the Ray most likely to have the longest scoreless inning streak? And the first thing I thought of with this one was, wow, if you could go with a minor leaguer, Blake Snell went, 46 innings last year. But on the current Major League roster, who's most likely to have the longest scoreless inning streak?
Yes, if we could just pitch to single-A hitters, right? you know who I like? I like Jake Odorizzi. He seems to sometimes really lock in. He's had some hard luck, but let's go with Odorizzi on that one.
So we're going to play a little bit of a game here on the podcast this week in a little bit. We're going to call it Orioles Most Likely To, and I'll be throwing out an accomplishment, an event, and it's your job to say which Oriole player is most likely to achieve that event. But before we get to that, the Orioles, when you look at the roster, it seems like there is still some work to be done. Obviously, we've talked a lot about adding a starting pitcher. Things seem fairly quiet on that front. But they also most likely need to add a corner outfielder. When you look at the guys available, obviously they don't want to give up that draft pick. So that kind of probably takes Dexter Fowler out of things. Who's another outfielder that would make sense for the Orioles?
Well, I think when you look at what's available and kind of what they need, Austin Jackson is a guy that's intriguing to me. When you look, obviously he's a guy who profiles mostly as a center fielder. They have Adam Jones, but really you can put Austin Jackson in left or right field, and then you're only platooning one of those spots. I think the biggest issue with the Orioles, and yes, we've certainly talked about the starting pitching, and that's definitely a concern, but the issue last year with the corner outfielders was they were rotating around two spots, and it just got really heavy roster-wise. They had to carry so many outfielders, and they had to designate guys when they weren't doing well. They weren't getting much production out of those spots. So if they can find a hole, if they can find a way to kind of make it so that only one of those spots is being platooned instead of both, I think it could go a long way. And obviously, Austin Jackson is an excellent defensive player as well.
Is that going to be maybe the most interesting thing that people will be following during spring training, the Orioles' plans and what they're doing there in the corner outfield spots as far as how guys are playing in those spots from game to game during March?
I think so. There's a lot of intrigue because they don't know a lot about some of these guys. Mark Trumbo, somebody they traded. Kind of the book on him is he's been more of an offensive-minded player than a defensive guy, but if he gives you the offense, do you take a little less defense and play him every day? Do you rotate Chris Davis, who's played right field, into the outfield? Maybe give Matt Wieters from behind the plate and put him at first base? I mean, there's a lot of different options they can do. And I know that it was a big issue for manager Buck Showalter last year, not having somebody step up and take that left and right field spot. So, yeah, I think besides the rotation, that's going to be one of the most interesting things to watch because right now, they've got like 8 or 9 guys entering camp on their 40-man roster listed as outfielders.
All right, it'll definitely be something worth watching during the spring. All right, let's move on to now to Orioles Most Likely To. And like I said, I'll throw out the possible event and just tell me who you think the most likely Oriole to do it is and why you think that. We're going to start with pitching. Who is the Oriole most likely to throw a no-hitter or perfect game?
I think Ivaldo Jimenez, he's done it before. When he's on, he's absolutely dominating, and I think he's probably the guy in that rotation most capable of that.
All right, and who is the Oriole most likely to hit for the cycle?
Manny Machado would be my candidate. Guy who hits a lot of doubles fast enough now that perhaps he can stretch it to 3, and of course capable of hitting the long ball. So I think he's a guy who to me, I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen.
All right, on MLB.com, we have a thing called Must See, and that's the letter C. And it, there can be must-see classics, must-see catches, must-see clutch performances. And they're kind of above and beyond moments, not just an every game type thing, but you have a couple a night maybe across the whole sport. So with that explained and the videos we have on the site, the question for you is, who is the Oriole most likely to get a must-see during 2016?
Probably Manny Machado again, though Adam Jones has his fair share of highlight reel worthy plays. I think just watching Manny Machado every day, you get a little spoiled, but certainly you look around the league, he's one of the more exciting young players to watch.
Yeah, and what we do with the must-sees is you hear all the different broadcasters call of the play, and you get to see all the different highlights. And I think my favorite Orioles must-see was actually Machado a few years ago, when there was the runner on third, ground ball to Machado, and he faked the throw to first and then got the player out at third. That's one of my all-time favorite must-sees, and that was Machado. So certainly a good choice there. All right, moving on. Who's the Oriole most likely to hit a grand slam?
Chris Davis has to be the easy pick there. Hit a lot of them last year. Led the majors in homers, and obviously very strong, very powerful, very capable of hitting the ball out of the ballpark, particularly at Camden Yards.
All right, and who is the Oriole most likely to go 20-20 in 2016?
I hate to keep picking the same guys, but I think Manny Machado is a pretty good candidate. As I mentioned, hits a lot of doubles, a lot of home runs, really coming off of a career offensive year. I think the home runs are going to start to go up even more as he grows into his body a little bit more. Jonathan Scope is another guy to watch out for. Doesn't quite have the plus running speed that Machado has really worked hard to develop, but still could be capable just because of how well he drives the ball and how consistently he does it.
Was there a time in Adam Jones's career where you would have said him as maybe the leader for this?
Yeah, I think maybe. He still could, and it wouldn't surprise me. I feel like he goes under the radar all the time, among people like me who cover the team every day. But, he's a guy who doesn't hit quite as many doubles, not like Manny or Nick Markakis when he was in an Orioles uniform. The kind of, for certain guys, and I don't know what it is, just really profile it as double hitters.
All right, moving back to the pitching staff, who is the Oriole most likely to have the longest scoreless inning streak?
I think Kevin Gausman is capable of that, certainly, and they're expecting a lot from him to kind of step up, especially because, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, they haven't really upgraded that rotation. So look for Kevin Gausman to kind of come into his own, and he's certainly capable of doing something like that.